Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. The holiday season is upon us, and for investors and the markets, it's probably not a moment too soon. It has been a volatile month in financial markets, with investors grappling with a number of questions, including the potential for Fed rate cuts, the health of the economy, the return on AI investments, and the possibility of a bubble in the markets. The holidays will provide some downtime to think about these questions, and joining us here today to provide some answers ahead of the holidays, glad to welcome back from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas, Jason Dreho. With that, Jason, thank you for joining us on this Tuesday before Thanksgiving. I know we have a lot we want to cover with our listeners, so thank you for dropping by.
Well, happy Tuesday to you, Dan. Happy Thanksgiving early on. It's good to be here for what will ultimately be a really kind of short week, but so there's some notable things to discuss today.
Yeah, so let's get right into it, Jason, perhaps beginning with the Fed and an outlook for rate cuts. A cut in December was starting to look unlikely, as we spoke about last week. However, now it may be back on. So why is that, and what do you expect, Jason, from the Fed at the upcoming December meeting?
Well, as of about last Thursday, the market's implied probability of a Fed cut in December was down to 30-35%. And this stemmed from a number of FOMC members over the course of the prior week or so, giving speeches that were relatively kind of hawkish, basically indicating that they wouldn't necessarily support a cut. Then on Friday, New York Fed President John Williams gave a speech in which he said, and I quote, "I view monetary policy as being modestly restrictive. Therefore, I still see room for a further adjustment in the near term to the target range of the federal funds rate, end quote. In other words, he seems likely to be voting yes for a 25 basis point cut in December. From before to after he gave that speech, the market implied probability of a cut went from 35% to 65%. It's now actually at 80% as we talk on Tuesday morning, because on Monday we had a San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly kind of support a cut. She's not a voter at this time, but she is known for sort of aligning closely with Jay Powell. So, you know, I think it's possible we're getting a bit of a coordinated communication going into the blackout period, which will start on Friday, from Fed officials that a cut still looks likely. In between Williams, the New York Fed President, Powell, Vice Chair Michelle Bowman, Chris Waller, who also said on an interview yesterday that he supports the December cut, you have some of the more influential heavyweights, you know, as it were, on the committee leaning towards the cuts, and they can ultimately kind of sway other committee members to go in that direction. There's also, from an economic data perspective, the September payrolls data that we got did show a bit of an uptick in the unemployment rate to 4.4%. It has been creeping higher. So from a risk management perspective, the committee could sort of justify a cut now, saying, you know, already on data that's over 2 months lagged, we've seen some, you know, continuing softening in the labor market. We don't want it to get worse, so we'd rather get to be preemptive and cutting now. Ultimately, though, whether the Fed cuts in December or waits and goes to January and continues to cut, it doesn't necessarily change a whole lot in terms of the overall investment outlook. The Fed still has an easing bias. The destination of where they'll end up with a Fed funds rate probably by the end of next year doesn't really change much. And that's kind of what matters in the medium term. But certainly going, if Williams' comments last week were a nice little, you know, treat for investors going into Thanksgiving, a December cut also, I think, would be welcomed by the markets going into the Christmas and year-end holidays.
So with that, Jason, you mentioned some of the economic data that the Fed has and doesn't have going into the next FOMC meeting. Now that the government data is being released once again, what does it say about the state of the economy?
Well, the first releases we've gotten from the government data haven't really unambiguously clarified the state of the economy, whether it is just in a sort of a temporary soft patch or on the precipice of, you know, further deterioration. But between what we do have and the collective evidence over the last 2 months, I think it still favors the idea that we're in a soft patch that's likely to be followed by growth being accelerated in 2026. I mentioned that the September payrolls report was released. It was mixed overall. So on the headline number of payrolls growth in September, it was a good result of 119,000 versus 55 expected. But the prior 2 months for July and August combined were revised lower by 33,000. And that actually pushes August to negative territory. I mentioned the unemployment rate rose, wage growth also softened. So it kind of tells, again, a labor market that's soft, not necessarily further kind of cracking, but certainly not, you know, strong at this point in time. We did get, as of Tuesday morning, retail sales data for September. It was a tad below expectations, but that after came after strong sales in July and August. And overall, it still looks like the third quarter, which of course now is kind of backward looking, consumer spending was relatively strong, could be in the neighborhood of 3%. We don't have official measures yet for anything in the fourth quarter, for October, for November, that would give or even for September, for the broad kind of consumption expenditure data. But the more high-frequency kind of real-time credit card data indicates that consumer spending overall still remains relatively solid. And even though there hasn't been much new data, I think it's just worth pointing out that the Atlanta Fed GDP Now third-quarter tracking estimate for third-quarter growth has actually inched higher in the past few weeks. It was around 3.9% before the government shutdown, kind of flatlined basically until we got into November, got some data, and now it's up to 4.2%. Again, that's sort of backward-looking, but what it tells us is that going into the government shutdown at the end of September, the state of the U.S. economy could be described as resilient growth, yet a soft labor market, and sort of low recession probability. I think that, given the data we have thus far, that still seems to be the case overall. And then we have, with fiscal monetary policy easing next year, that's ultimately likely to support growth acceleration, especially as other policy measures like tariffs becomes less of a drag on the economy.
Now, Jason, the markets have been volatile and there has been sizable pullbacks in parts of the equity markets. What do you think accounts for this volatility? And is it a concerning sign or perhaps more noise?
Well, go to the bottom line, I'd say it's probably more noise than real fundamentals that should be too worrying. We can divide sort of the market drivers between sort of technicals, investor positioning flows, sentiment, things of that sort, versus fundamentals and whether the fundamentals have changed. On the fundamentals, there's kind of three main pieces that would matter for investors. There is the Fed and whether they're going to be cutting rates or not and how soon. There's the state of the economy. And then there's this question about all this AI investment and the possibility of an AI bubble and the kind of returns on all this CapEx investment. And is it sort of warranted? And to some extent, there's arguments that the economy is just one big bet at this point in time on AI. If we kind of think about these different pieces, the Fed, I already mentioned, it looks like it's we lean towards them cutting in December. But if we go back to end of October at the press conference when they cut, Fed Chair Jay Powell did mention that a December cut is far from a foregone conclusion. I think that and other hawkish commentary kind of got the markets worried that the Fed's not going to be cutting as aggressively, not supporting the markets. I think that sort of fear has been sort of dialed back just in the past few days. On the economy, certainly still questions remain about the overall state of the economy, but the latest data that we see kind of reinforces the view that I just mentioned that it's kind of relatively resilient. This is probably more of a soft patch and growth is likely to accelerate. So I think it's whatever sort of wobbles that related to the economy over the past month that goes will start to kind of dissipate a little bit. I think the AI story and CapEx, I think that's probably going to be a harder one to, at least in the very near term, sort of tamp down. Last week, NVIDIA reported earnings, which by kind of any measures was very strong kind of across the board. And the markets initially kind of rallied and then ultimately kind of sold off. And so now we're, I think, in a state where investors have said, in some way, fairly clearly that, we just have kind of greater questions about, the CapEx spend and the return on investment. You can see, that's not what investors are focused on. So when companies make these announcements like NVIDIA that CapEx is really strong, that's actually good for economic growth. But what investors now perhaps want to see is like the monetization of that. And so until there's some comfort that, ultimately this spend will generate returns and how they're going to be dispersed across the economy, it might be, maybe perhaps the markets will have at least a lack of a clear AI catalyst for them to kind of grind higher. Ultimately, I think they will, but I think in the near term, that's probably the more of the open question mark versus the Fed and the state of the economy. Now, this is also needs to be put in the context of the technicals. Like investors where I'd say kind of overweight risk and depends on what category investors you're looking at, like systematic strategies, probably even more so. There's been some dialing back of that. The hedge funds, had a relatively good year as we come in towards year end. They're probably looking to clean up their books going into year end to protect, profits like P&L. So taking down some positions. Yet anytime we've seen some decent economic data, commentary from the Fed, investors have been willing to step in. And that sort of, I think, reinforces the view that ultimately this is a market that's climbing the wall of worry, that some of the technicals and positioning that needed to be cleaned up have been sort of cleaned up. You may not get a lot of buyers who really want to push the markets higher between now and year end, but ultimately, once you kind of filter through a lot of this noise, the fundamental story from our perspective hasn't really changed over the past month.
So with that, let's end on portfolio positioning, Jason. Taking a look at some investment recommendations from the Chief Investment Office, what should investors be doing going into year-end and as they also prepare for 2026?
Well, regarding to the year-end, I think it's, you know, don't want to get, you know, particularly cute in terms of trying to anticipate a market rally or timing things between now and year-end. Going into year-end, it's a good time to think about tax loss harvesting, portfolio rebalancing, setting yourself up to be well-positioned for the markets next year. So the focus I would have is on, like, what is the view for the next 6 to 12 months? We did recently publish our year-ahead outlook that outlined a number of different investment ideas. You know, one of the key messages was, like, you know, kind of continue to buy equities. And given, you know, the fundamental story that I just laid out, given the technical picture, we still see good upside across the board. And as part of the most recent HOSFI update, we did upgrade Eurozone equities to attractive as well. So most parts of the world are now deemed attractive. So it isn't just a U.S. story. It's not just an AI story, but the macro story that I kind of laid out where growth can accelerate in the U.S., that's actually a view that we have across the board. So most parts of the world, we expect equity markets to do well. And in fact, if you're worried about the performance of U.S. stocks, USAI, and you've been over-concentrated, this is a good opportunity to make sure you're rebalancing and looking for opportunities, whether it's in Japan, Eurozone, China Tech is something else that we like, but just broadly kind of the equities outside the U.S. From a fixed income perspective, you know, the story is somewhat of the same. It's been for a while that credit spreads are relatively tight. You're not going to compensate a lot of risk for the risk you're taking in a lot of cases to be overweight significantly. Areas that we do like are more securitized credits, like agency mortgage-backed securities. They've done well this year. We think they still have more upside, but also not taking sort of too much duration risk. You know, there's a decent chance that the 10-year could sort of back up easily to 4.25% or 4.5% once it becomes clear that, you know, the economy is going to be, you know, relatively healthy. A Fed that is actually dovish, good for the front of the curve, but it could also push up inflation expectations if the thought is inflation will be a little more sticky and policymakers will, you know, support that. So be cautious on extending duration, you know, too much at this point in time. And then gold has been a kind of a consolidation period after a very strong run from kind of later summer into early fall. But we still think it has fundamental support as investors globally look for safe havens, you know, to do diversifications or stores of value. That includes central banks. And it has served its purpose of being a portfolio diversifier this year. So that's something else that we like. And more broadly, commodities, other parts of the commodity complex, like agriculture, base metals, we think that will benefit as next year plays out in terms of the cyclical story of kind of growth globally accelerating. So again, areas to kind of benefit from a more reflationary environment for the global economy in 2026.
Well, Jason, very productive and helpful conversation as we are speaking here on Tuesday during this holiday shortened week. And of course, do wish our U.S. listeners a happy Thanksgiving holiday coming up on Thursday. And Jason, do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again next Monday. Thank you again for dropping by today.
You're welcome and happy Thanksgiving.
You as well. Thank you, Jason. Again, today we have been joined by Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. On a related note, for some holiday reading, I would like to highlight Jason's most recent blog, which was authored on November 24th. That title is Further Adjustment. The blog is now available up on ubs.com/CIO. Though for clients of UBS, please reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Jason's most recent blog directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.